Blog Talk Radio.
This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview. Robert Wool cracks me up. Always has, always will. His HBO series, Arliss, about an overambitious Hollywood sports agent, was must-see TV in my house for years. And I've seen his first movie, Hollywood Nights, hundreds of times. Really, hundreds. If you haven't seen it, buy it. In terms of media experience, Wool played reporters in Batman and Cobb, and a disc jockey in Good Morning Vietnam. I knew I was going to do that. Good Morning Vietnam. And when Billy Crystal hosted the Academy Awards in 1990, 91, and 92, Wool contributed a good many of Crystal's best lines. This I'm sure of. It doesn't hurt that we share a birthday, October 9th, and we're both New Jersey natives. Now this month, Wool returns to HBO with his second Assume the Position special. It's a raucous run through history in which Professor Wool takes charge of a class of college students and shares more stories that made America and the stories that America made up. Robert, welcome to Mr. Media.
Well, thank you.
What attracts you to history so much?
Oh, I like storytelling. I mean, that's basically it. I just like storytelling, and that's all history is storytelling. Of course, the thing to always remember is, you know, you have to keep in mind who's telling the story. What's their agenda? What game do they have? You know, what point of view are they saying? And I just like storytelling, so history and lends itself because it's got characters in it.
When did you become skeptical of the way history is told?
I think by nature I'm just skeptical. Not cynical. I don't like the idea of being cynical because, as Wilde said, a cynic knows the cost of everything but the worth of nothing. But I am skeptical. I always want to know, you know, who's telling the story, and you know, I just question, you know, and then, you know, there was a great quote from Paddy Chayefsky in The Americanization of Emily where he said, "I don't know what is good or bad or true. I let God worry about the truth. I only want to know the momentary facts of things." And I think that's a pretty good line.
Well, how much do you read? My sense is that you must read a lot.
I do a lot of reading. I read mostly nonfiction, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And I read, you know, and the Internet is, you know, a godsend for research. And but I do read, not as much as my wife. My wife reads fiction. She reads a book a day. You know, she was used to work for Simon & Schuster, so she just devours fiction. I read nonfiction.
What have you read recently?
What did I read recently that was really good? You know what I just read was terrific was Catherine Graham's book, which was wonderful, Personal Journey, Personal whatever it's called. That was a great book, you know. And then I just read, I read a novel by Frank DeFord, who I got sent to The Entitled, which was a nice read.
Hmm. And what made you want to get in front of a classroom of college kids and talk history? That, I mean, there's one thing, it seems to me that to read history and to study history, but you really put a lot on the line by getting in front of kids who have nothing to lose by challenging and heckling. But, I mean, you know, you get up there in these specials and you just turn it on.
I thought there was a way to do this. I just thought there was a way to make the history more entertaining in front of a classroom. I'm very pro student. And the beauty of Chris Albrecht, the greatness of the genius of Chris Albrecht, is when I pitched him the idea, he said, "Okay, the one thing I know about what you're talking about is that we have to commit to shooting it. You can't have a script and develop it. Mm-hmm. It's like developing a stand-up act. You just have to shoot it." So I, you know, these things are pretty labor-intensive. So it takes a while, and then we workshop it in the classrooms for a couple of months, and then we go and shoot it in New York.
The presentation is very stand-up style, and I don't know, I'm just going to ask you, have you done a lot of stand-up?
Oh, sure, I started out as a stand-up.
See, I wasn't sure about that. And are you doing stand-up now?
I don't do much of it, no, I really don't do much of it anymore. I do some corporate dates, and occasionally I do a lot of hosting and charity events. Occasionally I'll go and do a stand-up gig, but not too often.
Now, what could a high school or college history professor or teacher learn from stand-up comedy about presenting their material?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if they can learn anything.
Really?
I'm fortunate in that I can workshop it out, and I can, I do have a background, and I don't know if it's fair to ask any other teachers to do that. That's not their job. Remember, first and foremost, it is a piece of entertainment. You know, it's an HBO entertainment special,
mm-hmm.
and it is a comedy special. I would only say that, use context. That would be the biggest thing I would say to teachers. Explain context of why and how these things happened, rather than just giving names, dates, and places, because that means nothing. That they'll memorize for a test and forget the next day.
Mm-hmm.
If you put a face on it, understand the characters involved and what their motivations were for doing something, then that would be my only thing to say.
Who do you most admire from American history?
Probably the common man. Probably the working man.
Oh, that sounds like a Time magazine answer, Robert.
Well, it's true, though.
The man of the year is you.
I admire, the people who have to, as we say in the show, get through it. These people of power, make decisions, that affect usually not them, usually the people, who work and live, under them.
Hmm.
So I really do respect the working man, the working woman, the family guy, the guy who bring the family, the woman who's keeping a family together and in the obstacles of society, whether it be present day or the past. It's all present day family. I mean, no matter when it takes place, history takes place in the present. It doesn't take place in the past. That's who I most admire. I mean, there are figures, just like any other kid, sports figures or scientific figures or stuff like that, people who accomplish. Anybody who accomplishes, gets through the workday and does their job, I'm a fan of them, the working men.
One of the things you say is that when the legend becomes fact, print the legend.
Right, that came out of Liberty Valance, Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Right. What does that mean exactly? How would you explain that to someone who hasn't
seen it? Well, that's exactly what, I think a lot of history is that, stories are passed down and then they become accepted as fact, and then people, they print them, they take it that way. That's just the nature of, in that one, it was pop culture, of culture. When you hear the story long enough, you do believe it, especially when it becomes accepted.
And, Robert, you make a point in both Assume the Position specials, the first one from a year ago and this new one. You say that your dad was a Republican, your mom a Democrat,
mm-hmm.
your wife is to the left of Lenin.
Yep.
Now, you've been interviewed and gone toe-to-toe with Bill O'Reilly, but is it intentionally difficult to get a fix on your politics?
My politics are, I don't really, I look at each individual issue and the overall, I think you have to take everything in consideration. I say because my dad was a businessman, he had a family business. So when you do that, your view on how, government affects you is different than somebody who doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it just gives you a different point of view. And I grew up in a different place. I grew up in the Northeast in New Jersey, and I went to school down in Texas. There you're exposed to a whole different culture and a whole different points of view there. So I think that's really good. I think in the long run, basically, however, in this country, it's not with social issues and stuff like that can change, but you're dealing in a capitalistic system. So the one party is the capitalist party. So it doesn't, the other stuff I really don't think matters a whole hell of a lot.
Hmm.
Again, social issues, individual issues, yes, but as far as the other people, as far as other things, not that much.
Hmm. Now, you made a very strong case for Hedy Lamarr's post-Hollywood accomplishments. So I need to ask you, how will American history look back on Paris Hilton?
Oh God! I hope I don't really think about Paris Hilton. I'm probably the only person in the world. I think that she won't be remembered. Basically, I mean, she'll be a footnote. Unless she creates something great.
Hmm.
As of right now, I don't know what the future holds.
Now, my buddies will kill me if I let you get away without asking about Newbomb Turk and Hollywood Nights.
Okay.
I hope you don't mind.
Okay.
What do you remember about getting that film made? Is there I don't know that we'll ever get a DVD commentary on that. So, but if you had
DVD
one,
commentary on it.
Is there really?
Yeah, there's one out. Yeah,
I
did it with. Did I do it or did Floyd do it? I think maybe Floyd did it.
I've had my copy so long, I didn't even know that. What if you could tell a story about that movie? What might it be?
Well, it was my first gig. I mean, I just came out in 79. I just got out to L.A., and within about 3 months, I'm handed the lead in this movie, and within another 2 months, we're shooting it. And what I remember most about it is the anarchy involved in the shooting of it, and a lot of good times, and a couple of friends who I still talk to, you know, so I'm still close to this day, and how people really I've stopped more for New Bomb Turk than anything I would say, with the exception probably of Arliss, because that was a TV series.
Right.
But outside of that, including Batman, including Bull Durham, including anything, I'm probably stopped more. I'm sure I'm stopped more for Hollywood Nights.
That movie just had such a, I guess it was kind of an anti-American Graffiti feel to it, which may have made it that much funnier.
Well, the pitch was, I remember when the way they sold it to the studio was American Graffiti meets Animal House. And as good as the movie was, the early cuts I thought of it were even better.
Really?
You know, I thought it was a much better movie when before they went to do all the preview screenings and chopped it down and stuff. But that said, what's nice about it, what Hollywood Nights also coincided, believe it or not, with the birth of HBO. Because when HBO first started, that was one of the movies that they ran over and over and over. And so, about 1981 in the early days. So they ran this thing, and it became, people would watch it. And it's amazing that, I hear about fathers watching it with their sons, and now those sons have grown up, and now they're watching it with their kids.
Mm.
So it's kind of fun now.
I said in the introduction that I had seen it hundreds of times. I wasn't kidding. I mean, it just cracks me up every time I see it. I love that movie. I don't know why. It must say something from my level of maturity, I guess. I don't know. But it's interesting, though, looking at the Assume the Position special and then Hollywood Nights, maybe it's the wonder of the camera, but you don't look like you've aged 25 years in that time.
It's more than that. It's 27 years.
Yeah.
Well, I have.
Okay. All right, just to be clear about that. Now, Fran Drescher, who was in that movie.
Sure. A lot of great talent in that movie. Floyd was great at picking young talent. That's Michelle Pfeiffer's first film.
Tony Danza was in there.
Tony Danza's first film.
Richard Shaw, right?
Dick Shaw had worked before, but for the talent.
Right.
Fran's in it. A guy named Pierre Paul, Gaylord Sartain, Stuart Pankin. A lot of good people in that movie.
Oh, Pankin was great. now, Fran was on Howard Stern's radio show recently talking about her interest in running for Congress. Now, unfortunately, she couldn't name the three branches of government when questioned, and I just wondered, knowing your interest in history, if she would get your vote.
I'm a big believer. I'm a big believer in loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
So probably I could get her on the phone. Maybe it's like I'm a believer in voting for your friends.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good thing.
Are you very political?
No,
you're not.
No.
So.
But I believe in voting for your friends in anything, whether it's the Oscars, the president, locals, your high school buddy running for junior class president. Why not vote for your friends?
Right. Now, another actress who you started with, or started with you, Sandra Oh, of course, now very big star on Grey's Anatomy, and made a name for herself, though, first, is your secretary on Arliss. She won the Academy Award, of course. How much credit can you take for her success? Did she not win?
No.
I apologize. She was nominated.
No, she wasn't.
She wasn't even nominated?
No.
She deserved it. Anyway, I'm embarrassed. How much credit, nonetheless, can you take for her success?
I gave her a job.
There you go.
I just gave her a job.
It all came from there.
Well, I don't know. I'd seen her work. I'd seen her do a movie called Double Happiness from Toronto, where she's from, and I thought she was really good in that. And when the part came, it actually came down to two actresses. It came down to her and a girl named Lauren Graham at the time.
Oh, really?
Yes, and either one would have been great. I just took a flyer on Sandra, and I am not surprised at all at the huge success of both of them.
Well, very different actresses.
They're both terrific. I mean, they're both two terrific actresses.
So what's next for you? I know when you did the first Assume the Position, there was talk of it becoming a regular thing, but it's been a year now till the second one. Will it get a regular spot, or do you have other things?
It's very hard to do. That's the one thing. These things are pretty labor-intensive. Between the research, the writing, the editing, the workshopping. I mean, I think, I enjoy doing them a whole hell of a lot. It's different. There's nothing like it. I really love watching the students and working with them. Hopefully it continues.
Do you have other things scheduled at this point?
There's a film project I'm looking to direct that I've been working on for a while called Pick Six, which was about the three ex-frat kids in 2002, I think it was, or 2002, who hacked into the OTB and won the Breeders' Cup. And it's a funny story about growing up and coming of age, a different type of coming of age story that I really like a lot. And between that and going to Paris next week, I mean going to Paris in 2 weeks, which I'm looking forward to for my wife's birthday. I'm taking a couple of her friends to Paris. She's celebrating a important birthday, so I'm looking forward to that. And going to the All-Star game next week or the week after, whatever.
Oh, very cool. Well, Robert, I want to thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media, and of course for making me a big hero among my college buddies who worship at the altar of Neubaum Turk and the Pie Wagon.
Do you know there's a band named Neubaum Turk?
No, really.
It's been a rock band for about 15 years, I think. I've never met the guys named Neubaum Turk.
Wow. Okay, that's an internet search I'll be doing as soon as we're done.
Okay.
And folks, if you'd like to keep up with Mr. Media's Friday interviews, you can subscribe to the site via email at www.mrmedia.com. You can also subscribe to the audio feed in the podcast section of iTunes. Thanks for joining us. Please come back next week for another Fridays with Mr. Media.